We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn, and we've got a great show for you today. Got a kid going to university? You know somebody who is? Well, we've got on the show today, Mr. Jerome Ostrov, written a book called Finding the Right School in the Era of BDS and Intersectionality, A Jewish Parent's Guide to Colleges 2018-19. That's in this half hour of the show. We've got music spread out throughout the show. We've got the portion coming up this week. It's Shmos, the beginning of the book of Exodus. We've got a dynamic story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israeli forces arrested 136 Palestinians as part of an anti-terror crackdown launched after last week's rise in terror attacks in the West Bank. Two IDF soldiers were killed by a Palestinian gunman. Five people were injured, four seriously, in a shooting at a gas station near Megiddo Junction. Police are still looking for the attackers. IDF troops found a fourth tunnel that crossed from Lebanon into Israel. Israel is investigating the nature of the tunnel and has already blown it up. The IDF said that it holds the Lebanese government accountable for the attack tunnels. Senator Ted Cruz introduced the End Palestinian Terror Salaries Act of 2018. The bills might be the last bill passed in this current Congress. The bill would impose sanctions against Palestinian Authority officials who provide financial rewards for Palestinian Arab attackers. PA Chairman Mahmoud Abbas has called the payments a red line, which he will not allow to be crossed, and insists on continuing the payments. Albania expelled two Iranian diplomats because they plan to attack a soccer match featuring the Israeli team. Iran accused Albania of being influenced by the U.S. and Israel in its decision to expel the two. 20-year-old French woman was attacked on a main street in the Paris suburb of Sarcey by two teenagers who broke her nose and robbed her as they shouted anti-Semitic insults. French police found the two and arrested them. Australia said it recognizes West Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and will open a trade office there. They're not talking embassy yet. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said that Israel supports a two-state solution and hopes that one day recognize a Palestinian capital in East Jerusalem. Thank you so much. And finally, SodaStream, the carbonated beverage machine maker, recently closed its West Bank factory and plans to open another factory in Gaza properly. The company employs 1,100 people. The new plant will employ 70. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on live Jerome Ostrov, who has written a book called Finding the Right School in the Era of BDS and Intersectionality, A Jewish Parent's Guide to College's 2018-19 Academic Year. How are you doing, Jerome?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. I would appreciate it if you would speak up just a little bit.
Okay, likewise, because I can hardly hear you as well. So we will do this. Sometimes this happens. This is one of those gremlins that we have with the station here. Okay, for those people who have spent the last 20 years living in a cave, could you explain to us what the letters BDS are and their significance, Jerome?
BDS, which is probably familiar to most of your listeners, stands for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. It is an effort that was begun about 13 years ago, and it has caught on to the college campus today. And ostensibly, its purpose is to highlight the plight of the Palestinian people. However, in recent years, the slogan of BDS on college campuses and elsewhere has become From the River to the Sea, which is very transparent shorthand for eliminating Israel as a state.
So could you please describe, how has this movement grown in the last 20 years?
If I understood your question, is how have things changed in the college campus in the last 20 years?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, when I was in college many years ago, things were well understood. There were Jewish fraternities and Jewish sororities and Gentile fraternities and Gentile sororities, and there were very little minority representation on campus. Today, things have changed considerably. There is a lot of concern about involving minority representation in college life, and it's involving the representation of all strands of America in college life. And that's a good thing. And what has happened in recent times is that various elements of college society have banded together, particularly those who consider themselves to have been oppressed through history, and have adopted a strategy of coming together to represent their concerns and to address what they consider to be oppressive indications of society that hurt them individually and collectively. And that isn't necessarily bad either. Identity politics have been a part of American life for a long time. What has happened in more recent times, however, is that many strands of this spectrum, which is referred to as the intersectionality spectrum, have adopted the Palestinian narrative. And from their point of view, anything that they consider to be bad for the Palestinians is bad for them, because they see the Palestinians as being an oppressed community and therefore one in which they are in sympatico with. And that in itself isn't necessarily a harmful thing if it were exposed to dialogue and discussion and the grievances were aired in an environment where all sides were in a position to participate and express their point of view. However, what has happened is that the people who endorse the Palestinian narrative, mainly Palestinian students, but but backed by a lot of others on this very progressive intersectional spectrum, have taken the view that dialogue is bad because it tends to normalize what they consider to be an illegitimate Israel. And as a result, we have seen in recent years that people who have come to college campuses, who in good faith have been there with a view to, with a view toward discussing the Israel in general and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in particular, have been shouted down, with the result that there really hasn't been the opportunity for dialogue. So what you have is a concerted community effort addressed at what they consider to be an injustice, but without any attempt to articulate what they consider to be the real issue, and definitely without any effort to engage in conversation with people on the other side so they can better understand.
Okay, understood. So where would you say that the BDS movement is most prominent now on college campuses in America or North America?
Well, it's a sort of interesting phenomena in that the Palestinian community represented on college campuses tends to like the same kinds of schools that Jewish students do, which I think is a great thing for the Palestinians. It shows that they really have some good sechel. And in a sort of broad way, what that means is that the campuses that Jewish kids have considered to be, you know, their the main source of their attraction over the years because of their open-mindedness and liberality, have now become hotbeds for Palestinian involvement through organizations, you know, such as SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine. And Jewish kids have gravitated, you know, to what have always been their favorite university destinations, now find that those same destinations are areas where they are confronted with many issues, and a lot of them very anxiety-provoking. To put a fine point on it, in many campuses, it has reached the point where anybody who arrives with Israel in their soul, with a core part of their identity, are finding it very, very difficult to express that point of view openly because they are being painted as being anti-Palestinian. And in general, because of their association with Israel, they are immediately branded as being oppositional to the various elements that comprise the intersectionality spectrum. So, for example, you're in Detroit, and therefore you're only a half hour from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and you've undoubtedly read in the press and they've experienced it through personally through friends you know there, that there have been a number of incidents this year on the heels of the University of Michigan student government voting in support of a resolution for divestment BDS. In particular, there have been two university teachers, one an associate professor and one a graduate student, who refused to write letters of recommendation to Jewish kids who wanted to study abroad in Israel. And then even more recently, one Jewish kid was made to sit through a required course in the School of Fine Arts in which a guest lecturer posted an image of Netanyahu next to Hitler, equating the two. So when those things start to take off, they create a very, very uncomfortable college environment. And what we're finding is that in many instances, that college environment means that Jewish children who are interested, and I want to emphasize Jewish children who are interested because not everybody is, are made to either leave their Israeli identification at the door when they arrive in the interest of being part of the college community and particularly the progressive elements of college life with which they identify, or maintaining their Jewish maintaining their Israeli identification and therefore their Jewish identification and being excluded. And that's not a good thing. Even if it only applies to a handful of students on any college campus, that's a terrible thing. And that's the primary issue with which I am most concerned, the potential marginalization of Jewish kids who come to campus buoyed by their belief in Israel and Judaism, and who are being made to sit on the sidelines if they really want to pursue that while they're there. At Pomona College just this past week, there was a sign that had been put up in memoriam of what had happened in Pittsburgh in the Tree of Life Synagogue. And it was a mural, and it said, anti-Semitism exists. Accept it. And somebody had written over it, anti-Palestinian attitudes exist. Accept it. And they interviewed a couple of students of Pomona, and one of them said, these days, just being Jewish, even going to synagogue on the weekend, is a political issue. It raises alarms, and it makes Jewish kids feel uncomfortable. And that can't be allowed to continue.
Okay, our guest today is Jerome Ostro, who's written a book called Finding the Right School in the Era of BDS and Intersectionality, A Jewish Parent's Guide to College's 2018-19 Academic Year. And but in what I've seen in following the news and we report things, there is an anti-BDS movement. There are to date, I believe, 28 states that have passed legislation saying that they will not tolerate any type of a BDS attempts. They won't do business with any.
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize that I am not a lonely voice in the wilderness. There are countless, multiple now, organizations, some of them tripping all over one another, talking about Jewish organizations, who have been instituted to address this issue and are doing a very, very respectable job on campus. And Hillel and Chabad in providing a place of refuge for Jewish kids and standing up for them are also providing an indispensable service to Jewish kids. And not all Jewish kids on all campuses feel uncomfortable. Some campuses, for one thing, have not had the same kind of BDS experience at other campuses. But these organizations, for example, an organization called Stand With Us, are doing their utmost to empower Jewish leadership on campus so that Jewish kids can really step up to the plate and articulate what they stand for and why it's important that their point of view be respected. At Wake Forest University this past week, not the kind of place that Jewish kids have historically attended in North Carolina, the Jewish student body, unlike the trend that we've seen up until now, adopted, did I say Jewish student body, the student body at Wake Forest, adopted a resolution supporting Israel. So I think with a lot of tenacity and backed by a lot of organizations, we will see that this movement is not going to continue unabated. That's certainly my hope. And there are now about 20 or so state legislatures that have adopted anti-BDS legislation. That comes with a little bit of packaging because it raises some free speech issues. But nevertheless, they have adopted anti-BDS legislation, which is bringing the issue to the fore. I have a relative who reads the New York Times and Washington Post daily, and she was astonished to read the first chapter of my book and said, how come I don't read about this in the mainstream press? Well, I think we're going to start reading about it in the mainstream press, even if it's in the context of lawsuits that are being brought against legislation of the kind that I've described. There are also a couple of states that have adopted what I will call anti-shutdown legislation, which states that if students, in particular anti-Israel students, shout down speakers the first time they are warned or maybe even suspended, the second time they're expelled. Now, again, that raises free speech issues, but nevertheless, it's going to bring attention to the issue. And my position on free speech is that it is an enshrined right in this country. It certainly doesn't exist in Gaza or in the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. And it stands to the proposition that anybody can say anything, provided that they don't harm others in the process in certain specified ways. But that right to say what they have to say ends at the point where they suppress the ability of others to express their point of view. And that's what the anti-shutdown legislation is all about. It's intended to enable people to express their point of view and to engage in the marketplace of ideas in the way that our founding fathers intended.
Okay, understood. Okay, so now, it is the dream, I would say, of 90%, we're talking Michigan here, 90% of parents who are in Michigan have this, like, goal that their child should wind up at or should attend the University of Michigan. It's like, oh, what did I do wrong? My kid is only going to state. Or that, I've actually heard people like that. Nebuch. So, but Michigan, you have various different degrees and listings for the various colleges that you polled, and Michigan ranks way up at the top, and it's rightfully so, in its BDS movement. So now, how does a parent who wants their kid to get a University of Michigan education, at University of Michigan is in the top 10 in just about every single category of however they rank universities, to deal with their little Jason or their little Rebecca going off to Ann Arbor?
Well, for one thing, the University of Michigan administration, which of course has a Jewish president, has made it clear that BDS is something that they can't support. Secondly, I know through my own experience with the American Jewish Committee, of which I've been on the Board of Governors for about 15 years now, there has been considerable involvement of the local Detroit Jewish community and the various Jewish organizations in the Detroit community, including American Jewish Committee, to bring these issues to the fore to President Schlesel, if I pronounce his name correctly, and
That's
others.
Correct.
And also to make sure that those people who have been involved in the life of the University of Michigan financially and otherwise through their alumni activities express their point of view on their displeasure with what's happening. So word has gotten out, and through the alumni network and those people who were involved in the Board of Trustees and the administration are all very much involved in making it clear how uncomfortable and difficult the situation this is. Secondly, University of Michigan has a very, very fine Hillel. And there are a number of organizations on the campus that are in a position to support both the Israeli point of view and to buttress Jewish kids who want to express that that point of view. I think all those things will, over time, help to make the environment at Michigan more comfortable. But it is still important for Jewish kids to stand up for what they believe in. And there, on Michigan, as is true of every campus, there is an annual Stand Up for Israel event, you know, in which kids have booths and there are discussions and things like that. But I think there has to be more than that. I think there have to be editorials in the paper. I think that college teachers who make life uncomfortable for Jewish kids have to be identified. I'm not talking about the Canary movement where people are vilified because of their point of view, but I think it is necessary that a teacher who is teaching a course that may be required or is quite desirable and who has made it clear that he or she is towing the Palestinian line, their efforts on that behalf have to be publicized so that everybody knows what's involved. And I think that it is absolutely unforgivable that the student governments can go about their business without being totally transparent and without being required to present people who represent all points of view openly, publicly, and extensively. And I don't think that has happened enough at the University of Michigan and at other campuses. And the parents, they have definitely not gone wrong. You know, we live in an era where most of us are very secular. And parents can help their kids by providing them with a bit of a Jewish education and a bit of a Jewish environment as they go along. That certainly helps to provide kids with an identity. Short of that, there are now a number of efforts that are taking place across the country, both through local federations, through organizations such as the American Jewish Committee, to educate kids before they go to college. And that is really a very, very important effort, and one which I believe is going to increase very substantially over time. Because if a kid goes to school at age 18, which is a very impressionable time of our life, as everybody knows, except for the 18-year-older, and they go there wide-eyed, and their interest is only in progressive activities, and they're told they can't be a progressive and still be pro-Israel, it puts them in a very, very difficult situation. By contrast, if they have been educated a little bit, even to the extent of being given some sound bites before they enter college, they're in a much better position to address that situation. So I'm very hopeful. I don't see Jewish kids not going to the University of Michigan because of what's going on. And I do see it as an ongoing conflict, so to speak. But I think one where there is enough Jewish muscle and enough Jewish organizations behind the anti-BDS effort so that we will indeed see progress in the future.
Okay. You mentioned Jerome Ostrov, author of Finding the Right School in the Era of BDS and Intersectionality.
By the way, only my mother used to call me Jerome. I'm Jerry the most.
Okay, Jerry. Thank you so much for letting me do that. My mother called me Herschel. So anyway, I have two questions here now, and we've got to wrap this up because we're getting to the end of the time allotted. Okay, so this is for the University of Michigan is good because the Detroit community is very, there's 75,000 Jews. It is a very tight-knit, very Jewish community. And it's people stand up and people do. And what it gets accomplished as far as Judaism in Detroit is actually quite impressive. For the size of the Jewish community, they do more than, say, Miami or Philadelphia, which is dwarfs the Jewish community here. So now my question then turns is, what about the kid at UC Davis? Davis is like, UC Davis is one of like leading schools in anti-any. I remember as a kid, they were, as soon as Angela Davis got out of prison, they hired Angela Davis. This is the mindset of UC Davis. So what's a Jewish kid going to do there?
Southern California and Northern California have no lack of Jews. And the former president of the University of California system was Jewish. And certainly there are countless alumni of the University of California system. There are 500,000 Israelis who live in California. So there is a robust population of Jews in California, just as there is in Detroit. However, the University of California system has gotten, I don't want to use this terminology too lightly, it's gotten a little bit out of hand. And I think that the chancellors of the University of California have begun to recognize that. Just in the past 10 days, every University of California chancellor has endorsed a statement that they are opposed to BDS. That having been said, if you look at the University of California at Davis, which received some prominent attention in my book, there are people there who are saying the most despicable things, not only about Israel, but about Jews. And it has really put Jewish kids in a very compromising position. At the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, there have been two or three highly celebrated cases, might use that terminology, where Jewish kids who sought to be part of the Jewish government have been excluded because they couldn't be relied upon to toe the BDS line. Now, in the case of at least one of those kids, the American Jewish Committee chapter in Los Angeles really rallied to her support and really backed her and made it easier for her to be a student and still confront the various insults that she was receiving on a daily basis. And she was recognized by the American Jewish Committee for her courage and her support, all the more impressive because she wasn't Jewish. The student who was the president of the Graduate Students Association at UCLA was so badgered by anti-Israel elements on campus that he found it necessary to transfer from UCLA to NYU. And that was quite remarkable because this student was from the Midwest, and he was of Asian Indian ancestry. So things have been fairly tense on the UC campuses, and it's a very, very tough situation when Alan Dershowitz tried to speak at the University of California Law School. He encountered immense red tape. And only by virtue of the Jewish dean of Bolt Hall, University of California, was he able to address the student body. And by the way, Bolt Hall, which is the venerable name of the law school at University of California, is going to be changed because the man Bolt was associated with activities that various people on the internet sectionality spectrum find to be offensive. So the school can even change its name when it considers that people have been offended. But when it came time for Dershowitz to speak, as I said, there were all kinds of hurdles that were thrown on his path. The West Coast is a very, very tough nut to crack.
Mm-hmm. And indeed.
My view is that the best way of doing it is to use the power of alumni muscle and people who are on the boards of education. One thing in my book that I do is I identify the major Jewish donors at the various schools that I discuss. And I'm talking about big-time donors. And if you go across the board, you'll see that on most college campuses, the money that enables schools to survive, a lot of it is Jewish money. And I'm not talking about a Sheldon Adelson type move, where money is used to force the direction of a college's attitude towards something. But what I am talking about is people who are in a position of influence, really using their influence to constructively do whatever they can to make sure that the conversation is two-sided and that both points of view are expressed. And most importantly, that Jewish kids are allowed to be comfortable in their own skin on college campuses, whatever their point of view. And even if they are very pro-Israel or even if they are totally secular and disinterested. Because what we're seeing is that a lot of kids are tending to stand on the sidelines, which happens to be the title of a study that was done by Stanford, I believe, which came to the conclusion that most Jewish kids are comfortable. But on the other hand, a great percentage of them are standing on the sidelines and not getting involved in the discussion. And that's not a good thing. So not a very consoling answer about the University of California. There is an organization which I support very wholeheartedly called AMCHA Initiative, AMCHA.
AMCHA, yes.
And they have taken it upon themselves to publicize what's going on at the University of California on a regular basis. And they now have quite a cross-section of Jewish organizations and non-Jewish organizations across the country who are supporting them and highlighting what's happening on the University of California campuses. And I'd like to be able to say that there are some campuses that are exempt from all of this, but I'm afraid that it's not true.
Maybe Yeshiva University, but okay. We have to wrap it up, Jerry. Again, our guest today is Jerome Ostrov, Finding the Right School in the Era of BDS and Intersectionality, A Jewish Parent's Guide to Colleges 2018-2019 Academic Year. Do you have someone who is going to college this year? Do you know someone who is going to college this year? You know somebody who is in college already. So this is the book for you. It is very well researched. And Jerry, I want to thank you so much for coming on and enlightening us on what's going on.
You're very welcome. And I just want to say that my book is not intended to alarm. It's intended to educate. And I hope it's read in that way because that's its sole purpose. There's no reason for alarm, but there is great reason for understanding and education.
Wonderful. We're going to thank you so much. And okay. Are you planning a sequel for 2019, 2020?
Yes.
Wonderful.
I work on it every day, and I'm looking forward to it coming out.
Okay. We'll be looking for it. Thank you so much. Take
You're
care.
Very welcome.
We're going
Bye-bye.
To take a quick commercial.
Goodbye, Shalom.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We got some time for just a little bit of music. This is brand new Lippe Schmelzer, Tiskel Mitzvahs. You deserve reward. Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Per Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We got time for one more. This is a group is called Orchestrina, and it's called Ahura, and that's what we're going to listen to. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herr Schulzman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of the week is the book of Shmos. We begin the book of Exodus, Exodus 1:1 this week. The birth of Moses, the growth of Moses, the Jews getting enslaved, the whole business. We all know it. It's the beginning of the Passover story, and we're with Moses now till after Rosh Hashanah. He's in every single portion of the Torah from now until the end of the 5 books, except for one, and we can talk about that when that happens as to why that one's not there. The question, though, is why is it that the book is called the Book of Names? Usually, when you call something by its name, it should indicate something about it. In English, it's understood. It's the Book of Exodus. And it's talking about how the Jews got out of Egypt, because we know how they got in. That was in last week's portion already. The name indicates something about it. So the fact that we call it the Book of Names, and we list there the 12 sons of Jacob, who we know who the 12 sons of Jacob are. We've already had them. They were how they were born and what they were named after. And in Parshas Vayigash, she gives a whole census as to who were the 70 people who were down in Egypt. We know all of this already. It says, but a name is an identity. That the Jews, even though they were in Egypt, and even though they were involved with backbreaking labor, and the Egyptians tried to kill them, physically and spiritually, they maintained their identity. We live in a free country. Baruch Hashem, if you're listening to this right now, it's an indication it's a free country. I have the right and privilege to criticize the government, to stand up and say, this government's doing things wrong. I could do that. And I can stand up and I can say, I'm only eating kosher and I'm not working on Shabbos. So how much more so, we should be keeping our identity. We are running out of time really fast. We have to take a quick commercial break. We've got the Hasidic story coming up. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herr Schulz-Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com, www.rabbifinman.com. And you'll find right on the homepage a way to connect me. You'll also find archived editions of the radio show, archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, ways in which we present Judaism in an entertaining and educational mode. Also find the very important donations page. We're getting up to the end of December over here, folks, and we're still looking at October on the outside. So it's getting it slowly, slowly. I hope maybe by next week we can do it, but let's start January off new. Let's get 3 months paid off. Let's do it. Go to RabbiFinman.com. Go to the donations page. Get it in before the end of the year so it counts towards your deductions on your taxes for the year 2018. Hello. And you'll be happier you did it. Listen, you've listened for the show for 53 minutes already. You must like what you're listening to. So go to RabbiFinman.com. And donate today. Don't like doing internet giving? No problem. Drop your donation into a proper receptacle. Put the proper postage on it or drop it off at the door at 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Speaking of Ferndale, Jewish Ferndale tomorrow is having. It's December the 24th. And what do Jews do on Xmas? We eat Chinese food and watch movies. So tomorrow night at Jewish Ferndale is Glatt Kosher Chinese food all-you-can-eat night. You have to go to the website, www.jewishferndale.com, to RSVP so we know how much food to make. And we'll be showing very entertaining movies. Hannah Finman makes the best egg rolls. I cannot stop eating them. And everybody else's egg rolls? Nah, not interested. Hannah Finman's? Yep. Those are to live for. Yes, indeed. So that's tomorrow. That's what's coming up. We also have coming up at Jewish Ferndale, beginners and intermediate Hebrew. You can sign up for that. Just drop me a line at jewishferndale.com and let us know that you're interested in taking. We have Dvorah Kaplan, who has a master's degree in Hebrew as a second language. How's that for a degree to possess? And she's a phenomenal teacher. She'll have you speaking like an Israeli in no time. Okay, not like that, but proper Hebrew. So do that. That's all at Jewish Ferndale and jewishferndale.com. Okay, there was a disciple of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe whose name was Alexander Sender of Shklov, who was a businessman. One day he was traveling through Liadi and he stopped and had a private audience. And the Alter Rebbe said, "You should go to this in this faraway town in Galicia, southern Poland, and do business over there." And he, the Rebbe said so. Okay, he had no plans. So he got together an entourage of people, that was business people. The Rebbe said, "This is a good place to do business." So they said, "Oh, well, I'll go, yes." So they all traveled to this place. They found nothing. They inquired, "Where is a good place to stay? We want kosher food." So they said, "There used to be a rabbi in town, and he has a daughter who got married, and she opened up an inn, a hotel. And she came, and he told them, we need a place to stay. We're here to look for business." So it was Friday afternoon, Friday night. They're singing the Sabbath songs, and he hears crying. And he goes to this woman and sees her crying. She says, "What's the problem?" He says, "My son has no place to go to yeshiva over here. I want you to take my son back to Russia, and he should learn in a proper yeshiva." He said, "Just like that?" He said, "Absolutely." And just to cut the story short, the young man went back to Russia, and he became the progenitor of the famous Chain clan that his granddaughter actually married the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe. That's going to do it for us. I'm going to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope that you have a great week. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
And Zadie made a kiddish Friday night. And Zadie, oh my Zadie, how I love him so. And Zadie used to teach me wrong from right.